Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of.
Scientists who read the podcast.
And today we're talking about our October book.
October.
Yeah. We're definitely catching up to reality, but right now,
We are.
to like our current timeline. And we keep recording on in like different at different times to normal to make sure that we catch up, so it'll be nice to have a more regular schedule next year.
Yes.
So our October theme was translated tales.
Good theme.
Yeah, it was a very fun theme, and like the idea behind it was kind of to mostly just to read books that weren't originally written in English, right? Because we, even though like we're a book club with people with like members all around the world, but because most of us read books in English, I think it's quite common that we read books that were originally written in English.
Yes. Have we read anything else that has been translated? I feel like we have, like by accident.
Probably.
Or am I imagining that?
Let me get a list up of what we've read so far. Ever.
Ever.
It feels like, because like I was thinking about because it's kind of made me sort of think about like what books I read and like how often do I read translated books, and also because like obviously like English isn't my first language, but I don't often read books in German.
Yeah.
So I did. Oh, well, I haven't read it yet, but me and my mum have started a little book club. Well, it's not really a book club, but it's just us and trying to
It's
like,
still a book club.
yeah, it counts, right? But
Yeah.
to for us to like read books together and then chat about them. And the first
That's
one we're reading
sweet.
is an Austrian book, so
I've got it in my head that we've read a translated book, but
Yes, having a like scanning the list of books that we've
yeah.
read so far, I'm not aware of any that weren't originally written in English. And like, yeah, I think it's made me sort of want to read more translated books as well. Like because I feel like a lot of the time, especially with books from like Korea and Japan, like the most translated books that I've read have been like translated from Korean or Japanese. And obviously
Yes.
the book we're talking about today is written by a Korean author, Cho Nam-ju. So I think it's a good sort of it's a good way to like learn more about other cultures, right? Because yeah, there's just something about people writing in their own language that like I feel like there's such an expectation, like in science as well, to for people to
Yes.
always
Yeah.
use English for everything.
Yeah.
And obviously it's great that books are translated, like
Yeah,
because it
so it's
makes it more
available.
accessible.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. It makes them available to people in different languages. And the same counts for books that are written in English and get translated into other languages. I mean, I grew up reading books translated into German
Yeah.
until I then started mostly reading in English, but
I like seeing different covers of
yeah,
translated books in different countries.
they're often like so pretty, like I've seen people like buying them just for the
Stunning.
cover even if you don't know the language, but
Yeah, I know a lot of Samantha Shannon's are absolutely stunning, the editions that she of like Priory.
Yeah, because they're so pretty already.
Yeah.
So today we are talking about our October book, like we said, our translated tale. And the book is called Kim Ji Young, Born 1982. It was written by Cho Nam-ju, like I said, and it was translated by Jamie Chang. This is a I'm really excited for this episode because we've not talked about the book in detail at all.
We've not.
That's going to be the case, I think, like for the next book as well, the next couple that we've got left of the year, which is
Yes.
terrifying that there's only two. But it's kind of fun because.
This is the first book I think we've disagreed on how we feel about.
Yes, that's quite interesting. I think, like, I'm interested to see what that makes with what that does with the episode.
Yeah.
So, Jen, how did you feel about the book?
I didn't hate it. I'll start by saying that. I didn't hate it, but I found it very dry. I think the way, I don't want to say boring, but it was very dry. I struggled to get through it, even though it was only like 164 pages or something. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to fly through this. I've probably read 400 page books faster than I read this book. I don't know, it just felt very. I mean, I think it was the point of the book. It was interesting, and I learned a lot from it, and the statistics were very interesting, but that made it feel like a non-fiction. And I don't want to be tricked into reading non-fiction. What I mean? Like, it's sold as a novel, which it is. It is a novel, and the statistics are there for a reason. Like, she purposefully put them in to kind of highlight how much of a problem, like, sexism and things are in South Korea.
Yeah,
South
South
Korea.
Korea, yeah.
So I understand the point, and I understand why, like, the footnotes with statistics were added, but it made it feel like a non-fiction book. And I don't want to feel like I'm reading non-fiction if I'm reading fiction.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Because so Kim Ji Young, Born 1982, is it's a book about a woman and her life. And what I read that so Kim Ji Young was chosen as her name because it was the most common name for girls in 1982, and kind of the author intended for the book to be basically like a reflection of
Yes, yeah.
every woman.
Yeah.
There is also, it's interesting because I listened to like a few podcast episodes and read a few things, people discussing the book, and it came up that so the cover, and I think the cover that I have does too, a few different covers show basically a woman with no face, and that's kind of to show that it's like the collective experience of women in
Yes.
Korea who were born around that time. But I
Yeah.
think we kind of learned that a lot of it still is reflected in future generations too.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I think that like referring back to what you said about it being nonfiction, I think that kind of tallies. And I guess the sort of dry factual manner of the storytelling does add to that. And I do get that. I think it is quite like in terms of the writing style, and we'll sort of circle back to that point later when we get to kind of why that's the case. But yeah, it does make it very like very factual, very sort of
Yeah.
straightforward. And
Which I don't mind in a non-fiction book. I do feel like there was a story. Which I know there was. I don't know. I don't know. Like, I know there was a story. We were following her life, and but there wasn't like a, I guess, the classic beginning, middle, end. Something dramatic happens in the middle.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. Yeah.
Like, that kind of classic plot line wasn't there, which I think is why I kind of felt a bit ugh.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I mean, I felt differently about it, which, I feel like despite the sort of very factual and dry nature of the like presentation of the plot, I guess, I felt that almost because of that, because we're just presented with facts, I had a lot of emotions about a lot of the things that happened in the book, because there's a lot of Like it's almost like a blank canvas. Like you're just presented with things and like things that ha like there is a lot of, very misogynistic things that happen and just but they're not presented as like anything horrible. Like they're just presented and our character isn't like really like Ji-young, she's not really reacting or showing any like massive emotional reactions to any of that. It almost like feels like as the reader you kind of feel that on her behalf in a lot of those situations.
I agree there. Like I did, it did make me feel that, like you said, there's a lot of misogyny, and I learned a lot from the book. I kind of was aware of that culture in South Korea, but not like the extent of how misogynistic it was. But I think, yeah, it just felt like a non-fiction book, so I didn't have the same feelings as I do when I read a fiction book.
Yeah, no, that makes
That's
sense.
kind of, yeah.
So yeah, shall we get into some of the more spoilery bits and discuss maybe some of the main themes that turn up in the book? And yeah, like we said, before we get to the spoilers, I think it's a great book which shows like certain aspects of South Korean society, and also like reading it as someone who doesn't live there, I think it does highlight a lot of similarities also. So yeah, I think it's definitely worth reading. And it is a very good translation, I think.
Yes. Yeah, the tr considering that was the theme, very good translation. And yeah, I don't want to be too like super negative about it, because like I said, it was interesting. It was just not what I expected. I think that's the best way to describe it.
That makes sense. Right, let's get into the spoilery section. Before we start our discussion of Kim Ji-young, born 1982, we wanted to give you a quick content warning to let you know we will be talking about themes such as misogyny, sexism, sexual harassment and sexual violence, mental illness, pregnancy, and miscarriage. Yeah, before we get into some of the themes that are in the book, I just wanted to quickly mention and also shout out a podcast episode that I listened to where the translator Jamie Chang was a guest. And yeah, it's a very good podcast episode. The podcast itself is called Breaking Down the Patriarchy, and
That
they
sounds like
did
a really good podcast.
it's good. I only listened to this one episode, but it was very, very informative and very, very useful. So I've linked the episode below. Definitely go check that out and to learn a little bit more about the translator as well. I've used some of the things that they talked about in here just for some facts and some context because so the translator Jamie Chang, she also was born in 1982, and
Oh, that's cool.
she was born in Seoul. And yeah, she did say in that podcast episode she sort of had a very different upbringing to Kim Ji-young. So
Oh, that's interesting.
there's sort of parts she relates to and parts she doesn't. She's also a part of the LGBTQIA plus community, which is cool.
Very cool.
I feel like yeah, it's just kind of exciting because we don't really know much about translators a lot of the time, but
No.
obviously it's quite a yeah, you can really change a story. And obviously I think translators pay a lot of attention to making sure that the story is preserved the way that the author intended, but I can imagine it can be quite difficult.
Yeah, I think especially 'cause with a language like Korean, it's very different from English. Obviously, like European languages are a lot more similar. So I imagine translation is slightly easier.
Yeah.
Not to disparage any European translators.
No,
That's not
but
my
it's
intention.
true. Like I
But
think a lot of the
yeah.
structures and even like the words we have for things are just
Yeah.
more closely aligned because the languages are related, right?
Yeah.
My mum sometimes asks me to translate certain things, and like she has a very like she has a very beautiful way of writing things, but the to actually get that across in English, like for me, like now obviously I'm not a professional translator, but I know, I would say I know both languages very well,
Well, yeah.
so it can be like still that can be a challenge. So I
Yeah.
think like I absolutely admire people who translate whole books and do that in a way where it's like a pleasant reading experience, and you're not, because
Yeah, yeah.
you're not translating something factually, right? Like if I was translating a scientific paper, that would be much easier to
Yeah,
translate than
yeah.
like a fictional or even nonfiction, like in a way where you want to read it, right?
Yes.
So
Yeah, definitely.
shout out to all the translators who don't always get mentioned or talked about as much. So
Yeah, absolutely.
kind of makes me want to do a theme like that again at some point.
Yeah, it's a good theme, I think. And I think I suggested a book for this theme that was the same book. Or maybe I didn't. I was going to, but it was the book that I suggested for the 500 Scientists Who Read Books theme as well,
Oh, yes.
which was Blindness, and I think it's such a good book, so I will keep suggesting that.
We'll read it at
I'll
some
try
point,
and
I
fit it
guess.
in. I'll try and fit it into every theme because it's really good.
Imagine if we found a book that fit all of the themes of the year and we only read one book. That would be weird, wouldn't it?
That would be a fun challenge. You know what? That would be a funny thing to do. Like, think of a book that we could fit into everything and always have it on the list
That
on
would be
like to vote
funny.
and see how long it takes people to notice it.
Yeah, it would be funny as well to like at the end of the year, which I guess we are at the end of the year, to go through the themes and fa see if there is a book that fits all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like translated books, and I think what we already mentioned about this one, I think they can teach us quite a lot about different cultures, right?
Yes, definitely.
So there are definitely a few main themes, I think, in this book as we sort of go through Kim Ji-young's life. Certain things that re-emerge and certain things that, you know, happen at different stages of her life. Like family and relationships is like quite a
Yeah.
strong theme, and that's one I think that stretches like throughout the whole of, well, people's lives in general, but obviously her life in like what family is like when she's younger, and then again like conforming to family expectations and stuff even when she's
Yes.
married. I'll also say here before I forget that we did in our book chat, we spoke to like one of our members, Molly. We've mentioned her before because she got me a book. But her
Yeah.
sister-in-law is from Korea, and so
Oh,
Molly
cool.
spoke to her, and her sister-in-law kindly agreed to let us like use some of the information, because I thought it was important to include like people's experiences who actually are from South Korea and have
Yes,
lived
yeah.
there. And the same goes for like some of the things that I took from the episode I listened to with the translator who also lives in Korea, because there is a lot of things again that I think we can compare to what happens here and in our lives. But obviously, you know, we were born, well, I was born 10 years later, you even more so.
Yes, 15 years later.
So it's kind of interesting to have that those different points of view, because like in the discussion again, we found a lot of different things that do still exist and are mirrored in our society too.
Oh,
So,
definitely, yeah.
the family and relationships aspect, I think, is really interesting in the book because it's very clear, like from a very young age, that there are very different expectations for girls and boys.
Yeah, I think the overarching theme obviously is misogyny and sexism, but it intertwines with like other individual ones like family. When she's young, it's like the preference for like how sons are more valued and
Yeah, and like that comes through in so many different ways. Like the fact alone that like her mother, Ji Young's mother, had so much pressure on her from her husband's family to have a boy.
Yeah, she
And
just like
when
kept having kids, didn't she, until she had a
basically,
son.
yeah. So yeah, they have a younger brother, and then the brother is like the most important thing, right? Like he gets his own room, and like even
He
like
gets better food at the dinner
exactly,
table.
yeah. And like Jiyoung's mother as well, like when she was younger, she and her sisters, I think, but yeah, she had to like work in like a sweatshop basically to pay for the brother's education. And like the nice thing kind of is that then means that her mother kind of encourages Jiyoung and her sister to do some like to go to university and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
But still, like the brother gets preferential treatment. Like at schools, the boys get preferential treatments. They get to eat first at lunchtime and things like that. And every time girls sort of stand up for themselves, that's discouraged and things
Yeah.
like that. And like all of those expectations sort of carry on into adulthood as well, where
Yeah.
like there's expectations with from like the husband's family, for example. Like there's a very like because basically we learn, like I guess at the start of the book, right, that Ji Young's having like a mental health crisis basically, and there's a setting where they're with her husband's family during like a
Yes, yeah.
holiday, and she sort of like she has these like I guess like a personality sort of shift
Yeah.
where she sort of presents as a different person.
Yeah, I think is it dissociative identity disorder that it's hinted? I don't think it explicitly states,
Yeah, I
but
don't
I was
think.
looking earlier and it was like it suggests that it's something like the ID.
Yeah. Like people have said that, especially in those like holiday scenarios, because like there is so much pressure on the women, and often especially on like the daughter-in-law, that you have to like do all these things for the husband and for the husband's family, that like so many people kind of like dread those things, which is just like wild, I think.
It is, yeah, completely wild.
And I do think that like those kinds of things are potentially, well, they're definitely not quite as severe in our society, I would say, in terms of like there are obviously different standards, and you can feel that like for boys and girls, and especially like just what when it comes to gender roles, that's definitely still a thing. And
Yes.
I think in adulthood as well, like right, like household chore, like
Yeah, definitely.
things like that's definitely still a thing, but I think the sort of expectations from family are not quite as severe.
No, I don't think so. Not in my experience, anyway. Maybe, years ago, but not.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Molly's sister-in-law, she said that like that the difference between generations, like that generational gap between like our generation and our parents' generation is quite big, which can make it quite difficult because you're never like on the same page when it comes to those kinds of things. And I think that can make it
Yeah.
difficult. Like apparently she did also say that like there's a lot of pressure, like when you come to join a family, like from the husband's family, for example. And apparently, that's like a lot of people say that that's one of the big reasons why the marriage rates are so low now.
Oh, that's interesting.
And like, I can imagine it, like the way it's portrayed in Kim Ji Young, like the pressure is wild. Like,
It's very severe.
yeah, I've got a quote here from Molly's sister-in-law, who where she said that her friend's parents-in-law, and they'd complain about her friend because she doesn't cook well enough for their son, and things like that. Like,
Does the son know how to cook?
well, exactly, yeah. And it's quite interesting, actually, like that the sort of marriage thing in the book, because I feel like her husband, Ji Young's husband, isn't really portrayed as like he's not really like a horrible man.
No, he's kind of just like very just chilling, you
Yeah.
know, very neutral.
Yeah, which I think is a very clever choice by the author to have,
Yes.
because you could really easily like fall into the trap of just, yeah, oh, this man is horrible, but it's not about that. It's about the way he just very comfortably exists in the co in those
Yeah,
systems of
exactly. Yeah.
society, where even though, you know, they have conversations about having children, they have conversations about who does what, who has which role, but like there's a conversation they have like before they even choose to have a child, and he says something like she'd be giving up XYZ and making sacrifices to look
Yeah.
after their child. And it's basically like she's basically saying to him, well, what are you sacrificing?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm not going to get to hang out with my friends as much.
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, don't worry, I'll help out."
Yeah, it's like, it's your
Oh, it's your
child.
child too. You're equally responsible.
Yeah. But yeah, I really liked that the way that he's portrayed as like just quite a normal guy, but there's a lot of things that come to the surface
Yes.
that are just a reflection of society, I think.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that that kind of leads into, we talked about, you know, their conversation about like having children, and again, like that's like, I think that's like a crucial part of like her current crisis, if we're going with like the sort of the now part of the book, I guess,
Yeah.
which is that she's sort of become a mother recently, and she's kind of going through a mental health crisis partially because of that, but also because, like, as we go through, we learn that just a lot happened in her life that kind of is very
Yes.
understandable that she's not feeling too great right now.
Yes, definitely.
What I sort of realized more, like looking into the book and listening to like some of the podcasts and reading a few bits, is that like that cycle of, well, their decision is she stays home because, well, it's an expectation anyway, right? You're a
Yes.
woman, you look after the kid, but they have a conversation, and like this, like we did talked about this extensively in a book discussion as well, that you always know from the start of the conversation, you know the end result is going to be she stays at home. Like
Yeah.
they set out like, oh, let's discuss who stays home with the kid. But it's obviously going to be her, and it's going to be her because the argument is, well, he earns more money than her. And that relates back to, well, the gender pay gap,
Well, yeah,
which
exactly.
there
Yeah.
is worse in
Yeah.
Korea. So there is an expectation for her to quit her job because
Yeah.
she earns less money. But like looking back on everything that even just the things we already talked about, like the boys get a better education, blah blah blah, like everything
Yeah.
feeds that system of, well, how could
Exactly,
she
yeah.
possibly be making more money than him? So she's
Exactly.
always going to end up staying home, and always then still going to have a disadvantage in her job, if even if she
Exactly,
goes back to
yeah.
work. And that's what's infuriating.
Yeah, it's just a vicious cycle, isn't it? Of
Yeah. And that is like, that's definitely still the case.
Yeah, I think generally, obviously there's not everyone is in that situation. I know people who it's actually been the other way. But in general, and obviously neither of us have kids.
No.
So this is just based on what other people have said to me and things, but I think you want to stay like as a new mother, I can imagine you don't you like you would want to stay at home with your baby. Like, why wouldn't you? You know, it's this little bundle of joy and all the hormones and what your body's just been through as well.
Yeah,
Like, you do need that
absolutely.
time. And we're lucky enough in the UK that maternity leave is better than in other countries, like in the US. I know it's terrible there, but it's that choice that's the main thing. But as well, that choice, then you're like, well, yeah, I want to stay at home with my child. I want to enjoy this
Yeah.
newborn bubble. But then you have to think, how is this going to affect my career?
Yeah, 'cause that's really what it comes down to,
That's
isn't
the
it?
difficult choice.
Yeah.
I don't think, in the UK anyway, I don't think we're forced to take extended periods of time off.
No.
And in depending on where you work, the split parental leave is available, not necessarily always feasible,
Yeah.
but it's there, it's an option. I don't really know much about it in other countries, to be fair. It's just really weird that we have to make a choice of, like,
Yeah.
I mean, I've got nieces and nephews, and when they were newborns, I didn't want to leave, like, let go of them or stop holding them. So I can only imagine as a parent
Yeah.
that you probably don't want to go back to work immediately.
No, and even if you wanted to, that's also not that easy because childcare isn't just incredibly accessible or anything like that.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's a very complex situation, isn't it?
It
But it's
is.
about personal choice. And it's about having the choice to go back to work and having a supportive enough work environment where you can go back, that your career is going to be supported. Because
Yeah.
that is one of the major issues, isn't it? That companies see women as unreliable hires
Yeah.
because, oh, you're just going to get pregnant and then you're going to leave.
Yeah, and that's an issue that comes out very strongly in
And
the
that's
book, for
in the book.
example. And
Yes.
also, again, another thing that Molly's sister-in-law said, she says she's been asked whether she's planning to get married and have a baby in a job interview.
Yeah.
Like,
I know someone whose PhD, one of her, it wasn't her supervisor, it was like one of her independent progress assessors that we had where I did my PhD. And one of them said to her, like, oh, I mean, the age you're at now, you're probably thinking of having kids. And how do you think that's going to affect your PhD?
That's just
And
horrendous.
that was only like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. It just shows that that is still like just an assumption people make and a judgment people make, whether they say something about it or not.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, don't need to tell anyone listening to this how problematic that is on so many different levels. Because,
Yeah.
like, for one, some people don't want to have children, and that's absolutely fine, and they shouldn't have to
Exactly.
justify that or
Yeah.
be or have people make that assumption about them when it's not true. Equally,
Exactly.
if you want to do a PhD and have a child, do that. Like,
lot of people do
we
that.
know some incredible people who've done that very successfully.
Yes.
Like, and you should be able to do that. You shouldn't have to
Exactly.
wait.
And just don't ask people about it. You never, like,
It's none of
you
your
just don't
business.
know what situation people are in.
Yeah.
Like, she could have been, like, someone could be pregnant and not telling anyone yet. They could be pregnant and still unsure about what they want to do about it.
Yeah.
They could be have been desperately trying to get pregnant for years and
Exactly.
not succeeded.
Or they could have fertility issues and just not be able to, like.
They could have just had a miscarriage. You know, you never ever. It's just a blatant rule, isn't it? Don't ask someone about kids unless they bring it up in there, which shows they're happy to discuss it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you just do not know what is going on in someone's life.
No, and you have no right to
And
know
you,
either.
it doesn't affect, yeah, in a job interview, it shouldn't even be brought up
No.
unless it's for health and safety reasons, which I've been asked a lot, like in health and safety inductions in the lab, and specifically, like, because we work with radiation, I have been asked a few times, but there's a reason, like, that is a safety
It's
thing. And
important, yeah.
that has never bothered me.
No, because like
Because it's a simple yes or no, could you be pregnant?
yeah.
Not, you know, it's not, oh, are you planning to have kids anytime soon? It's a simple yes or no question because it's important.
Yeah, there are
Like,
scenarios where that is important. It's the
yeah.
same thing when you go for an X-ray or something, right?
Yeah,
Like,
it's a medical thing, isn't it? You know, a lot of it's just a routine. And that's fine. But yeah, like I said, like in a work situation, that's the only, because we have to, there's when we do like the proton stuff, a couple of my colleagues have had children and they had to sit in a specific place in the room, which was like the furthest, the safest point to sit. And then I think it got to the point where they had to just stop doing it altogether.
Yeah, I mean it's
That's
similar in certain micro labs where I know at a place where I worked where we worked with Listeria, and there's just all certain chemicals as well
Yeah,
where
chemicals, yeah.
people just aren't able to go in the lab anymore
Yeah.
at one point, and that you have to tell people then from a health and safety point of view, but
Yeah.
it needs to be like people can still work. They just
Yeah,
can't
oh
go in the
yeah.
lab, so.
There's certain things that there was someone who was doing a postdoc when I was in my PhD lab, and she was pregnant. And she still went in the lab. There were just certain chemicals she wouldn't handle, and someone else would do that for her, but she'd still do all the experiments.
Yeah, exactly. Like you just make accommodations, and that's how it should
Well,
be.
yeah. I always thought it was really weird, though, because obviously, like, the standard if you're pregnant is to wait until like 12 weeks to tell people. But I always thought, like, if I was in a lab,
You'd have to
I'd
tell
have to
people
tell,
earlier.
like, as soon as I found out, I'd feel like it'd be important to tell, like, at least supervisor or,
That was the rule, like at my
yeah.
previous work. You had to tell someone to be able to
Yeah.
make accommodations.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
It makes sense.
And it's important, you know, especially with like the lives that we've worked in and stuff. It just always sat funny with me, like
It is odd.
I would like that someone at work would know, but other people
But you might
wouldn't.
not have told your friends.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent.
Yeah, kind of an important one though,
An
'cause
important one, yeah.
like I think talking about getting back into work after, but having a kid, or really for whatever reason, if you have a career break,
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that can be difficult, and and especially talking about like STEM roles and stuff, like there is so much pressure oftentimes to, especially in academia, I guess, but like to stay up to date with current research and things like that. I think there is a lot of pressure on people to
Yeah.
do those things even when you're on maternity leave. And then coming back is difficult. Like we had a chat about that in like in the book discussion again as well, that like a lot of us would feel, even though like the regulations again here, like you said, is that you can you have maternity leave and you go back to your job. That's how it is. But to then have to get back into the swing of lab work, and like you,
Definitely.
there's so much thing, so many things you'd have to retrain on and catch up on that it can be difficult, I think.
Yes. I think in academia as well, the major problem, and this is discussed, I've seen, I've read a lot of things where it's been discussed, is that the age where someone would have a child, that kind of, I suppose, our age really now, that kind of is, well, if like for me as an example, I'm nearly 27. Most people my age would be thinking about, if you wanted to have kids, this is kind of the time when most people, late 20s, early 30s, isn't it? And obviously, women have, or I've said women, but anyone who is assigned female at birth. Is that the, I'm
People
saying
who
the,
have the ability to bear children.
there we go. People who have the ability to bear children are on a clock. We've not got forever to have kids like men. And that is because I'm just starting out in my career in terms of postdocs and getting to the same point, and that is a huge issue in academia. I know particularly in STEM, I don't know about other fields, but
I can imagine it's similar.
it's probably similar. But that's a huge issue, is that I am just literally just starting out in my career, and if in the next couple of years I decided to have a child, that would be a major setback. And that is one of the main reasons why there are less women in leadership positions in STEM fields, because at this crucial point in your career, you're then having to make this major decision,
Yeah, that makes
which
sense.
I know is obviously it's not just STEM and it's not just academia. I don't know. I'm not making like assumptions about other careers or saying that it's worse in STEM, but just
But it
like
is
thinking
like
about
that
it
in
in
STEM.
that, yeah, it is like that in STEM, and there are other jobs where I can think of where it wouldn't have as much of an impact, but it's acknowledged, and I think there is a lot of work being done to try and help people who have children and counteract that, but it's just a big thing, isn't it?
It comes across very well, I think, in the book in terms of how big of a deal it is, because like Jiyoung doesn't really want to leave her career.
No, she doesn't, and I think that's, yeah, she doesn't want to leave, but she has to.
Like
And
if we're
not,
honest, she doesn't really want to have a child
she
either
doesn't.
to
No, she
begin with.
doesn't.
Not to say that she doesn't love her child, but like part of the discussion to begin with was that like h her husband's parents were asking, and he was kind of like, well, let's just have a child so that they don't keep asking.
Yeah, it's like we're gonna do it at some point. Let's just do it now. But yeah, she, and not only does she not, she didn't want it, but she doesn't even have a break from her career. She has to quit her job.
And it sounds to me like that is relatively common,
Yeah.
or at least was at
And
the
again,
time.
there's nothing wrong with that if that's
No,
your
if you if
choice.
that's your choice, I think that's exactly what it comes down to, right? And you
Yeah.
said this kind of when we were started talking about this kind of theme, that whatever it is that you choose to do, there is no, like, there shouldn't be any judgment on what you do, and you should have the ability to do what you want to do, be that stay at home and continue staying at home, be that going back to work. But the fact of the matter and the situation represented in the book is that it's hard to go back to work. And you're basically expected to just quit your job and stay
And
at
it's not
home.
her choice. She's not. It was very clear that this isn't the path that she wanted.
There's other things in the book as well about like workplace culture in general, and also like when she's first looking for a job. Again, like we mentioned, people getting asked about marriage and babies in interviews, but there is a really important part in the book, I think, where she's struggling to get interviews anyway, I think. And again, that comes down to like a lot of it comes back to, I think, what you've just said about people being more reluctant to hire women. And I think in the book as well, some of them being quite open about being reluctant to hire women because they just expect them to get married, have babies, and then leave, and they don't want people to leave.
Yeah, they see them as just like unreliable workers. But like men can take paternity leave too, you know? Like you could hire a really good man and he could turn around because his wife's had a baby and say,
Or for whatever reason,
actually,
I mean,
I'm taking, well, yeah, any reason.
you just always run that risk of people leaving, right? And like, especially if it's not a nice place to be, and that's.
And it's actually, thinking of that, it's pretty grim that paternity leave is only what, like 2 weeks
It's very short, yeah.
if you don't choose to have like split parental leave, because that's just not feasible for a lot
Yeah.
of people. I just think it's so tight that there's not just more parental leave
Yeah.
for both parents.
Yeah, because like again, like it's in that scenario, I can only imagine. Again, I don't even really know that many people who have kids like you do, but I can only imagine that's hard for both in that scenario. Because as a man, if you have to go back to work, or the partner who goes back to work probably doesn't want to leave their kid and their partner,
No, and their partner, yeah.
but then the partner who stays at home has to then do
You have
everything.
to, like, keeping a newborn alive.
You keep in having to keep a newborn alive, and if you are the person who gave birth, looking after yourself, like you're not like
It's not
physically
easy.
in a very good place a lot of the time, or mentally.
And people are always just like, oh, you get all that time off.
It's not time
And it's
off.
like, it's not a holiday. It's lovely. And a lot of people cherish that time. And, you know,
But it's
it
hard
is
work.
nice. But it's hard work keeping children alive. So while it is notoriously unfair to women, I think it is important to add a note as well that it is also it's not easy on the other partner either, just in a different way, I think, because that expectation is still there. They're expected to go back to work, whereas the other person's expected to stay at home and look after the child. So there's still that same gender role expectation, which again, if that's your choice, it's fine. And I think a lot of men in particular would be ridiculed almost if they were the ones who chose to stay at home.
That's another thing, isn't it? Like the whole expectation. And I do think
You've got to be the provider of the family.
that makes it again harder for women. That's another thing that's mentioned in the book, where they kind of see like Ji-young's getting Well, she has certain accommodations at her job where, for example, like something that she does is she goes into work later and stays later because she has to
Yes,
take the
yeah.
subway and it's very difficult when she's heavily pregnant. But people, like the attitude of people at work, and especially men at work, is
Yes.
that, oh, you're getting an easy ride because you're pregnant. But that's not, it's not
Yeah.
true. She's working harder, if anything.
Yeah.
And the same thing, like people sort of viewed the fact that people take parental leave as sort of them again getting an easy ride and it
Getting a
being like,
holiday.
yeah, and that is different for men. Again, I can only really speak about our society, but if a guy does anything, or if a man goes out with the kids and is like, oh, he's so lovely, he's looking after the kids, but for women it's just expected.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
and that's the same thing with like, oh, he's so good, he's taken 2 weeks off work. And it's like,
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the guys who do that view it in that way, but I
No,
think
no. Yeah.
in society it's still kind of viewed in whatever a guy does that goes outside of, the bare minimum is seen as, oh, he's such a good dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's just he's just being a parent.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Right, going back to what I was trying to say
Yes.
earlier. Again, like other aspects of the workplace that aren't necessarily to do with pregnancy or having children, there is also quite a lot of scenarios in the book of harassment and
Yes.
just general discrimination, but really very horrible treatment of women, beginning with an interview that she has when she's still looking for a job out of university, where in a group interview, they're asked the question of a scenario where if a client were to basically make sexual advances towards them, how would they react?
Oh, yeah.
And they basically want them, like the implication is that they want them to say, oh yeah, that's fine, brilliant, and not do anything about it.
Disgusting.
And that sort of really does set the tone for like
Yep.
expectations of women in the workplace, be that with male colleagues or with clients.
Oh,
Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
and that is just
Absolutely.
horrendous. And there is also a scenario in the book which actually is something that is quite a common thing in Korea, where in the book, and this is actually after Ji Young's left, she catches up with colleagues and she finds out that they had
Yeah.
cameras. They found cameras in the women's toilets that apparently, like the maintenance people, I think, had installed there and were like circulating videos of women who work there. And that it's called malka in Korea, which it's quite a common thing that in public bathrooms and generally in hotel rooms and things, people install hidden cameras to film women.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it?
Not only is it a massive violation, but also like specifically in that scenario, the only way these women at her work find out about it is not because the men tell them,
Yeah.
it's because one of the women has like a secret relationship with a guy,
Yes,
and
yes.
he's saying to her, oh, don't use that bathroom. And then
Yeah.
she kind of, he doesn't want to tell her why though. Like, even he
Yeah,
doesn't want to
even
tell her
him, yeah.
why. And all these guys who work there were like sending each other the videos. So it's
Oh,
like
horrendous.
there were guys who, and I think Jamie Chang says that in the podcast episode, and works out like they've been, some of these people, they've been working together for 9 years. They know each other quite
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
and you have no, like, the men who work there have no sense of, oh, maybe we should, tell them,
Yeah.
do something about it. Like,
It's just, let's just watch the videos.
yeah, send them to each other and like,
It's awful.
It's horrific, and I think it again, like, it hints at sort of a culture of like violence against women and
Oh,
harassment and
definitely.
stuff, which is an issue, I think, in Korea and everywhere. I'm not claiming it's a South Korean issue solely, but from the book, I think the camera thing, and generally another thing that's sort of like mentioned in the book, the sort of victim blaming aspect of it oftentimes, and again, like, men not being allies really, because like there's obviously there's a camera thing, but there's also like a scenario where when she's younger still, she lives at home and she's getting harassed by someone on the bus who like he follows her, and then luckily there's a woman on the bus who gets off the bus, I think, with her and helps her, and she calls her dad, but her dad then, who again, he also isn't portrayed as a particularly bad person,
No.
but he's basically
Just
blaming
blames
her.
her, yeah.
It leads into, I guess, the discussion of why this book was seen as such a like feminist book. And it's quite interesting because it's like it was a massive bestseller in Korea. And again, then translated, and I think also sold very well here. But it's being feminist, really, circling back to what you said at the beginning, just by stating facts. It's not
It's
showing any big reactions, not showing any, like, Ji-young isn't like this feminist activist or anything. We're just hearing her story, and that, because it reflects the reality of so many women, really sparks conversation, I think.
And I think that's why the statistics, like footnotes, are put in. I read that was a deliberate choice by the author to highlight that this isn't the story of one woman. This is a widespread issue. So, yeah, as much as it felt to me like it made it a bit drier, it highlighted the importance of it. And I think if I look at it as a non-fiction book, I'm like, yeah, this is really interesting.
Also, the big reveal, which is actually why it reads as a non-fiction book, is that we find out at the very end that it's basically written from the perspective of Kim Ji-young's therapist,
Who's a man?
who's writing a report about the patient, Kim Ji-young. He's a man, and at the very end, we find out that he's also a man who's kind of, again, in that society. And he, at the very end, like, he it finishes, I think, just by us realizing he's a therapist, he's writing it, and he there's like a little note at the end where he's talking about a member of staff who works in his practice who's leaving because she's having a baby, and he's basically saying, oh, I hope her replacement is unmarried. The implication being he doesn't want to keep losing members of staff because they're getting married, but there is no suggestion of, well, maybe he should make it possible for people to return to work at his practice. And I think the thing that's so clever about that, the device of it being the therapist who's a narrator, is that one, it means it gives us a way, not as it gives the author a way of presenting the book the way it is, very factual with the footnotes. Like at the end, when you read it, it makes perfect sense. It's a therapist report There's footnotes in it that corroborate facts that are stated in the book. But it also makes you question things and how they were told, because it's a man telling a woman's story. So you're almost wanting to read the book again to find out how many of the things may have been filtered through a man's point of view and look at how much bias there might be just based on him being a man telling her story.
It was. I kind of, I don't know. It wasn't clear whether the whole book is like the psychiatrist's notes, or whether it just switches at the end. I think that's reader's choice of how you interpret it, because the narrative switches. So obviously, like the last part, that's explicitly from
His point of
the
view.
psychiatrist's point of view, and he kind of reflects about what she's told him and about her life. But I think it's, I don't know, until someone said it on Discord, I didn't interpret it as the whole book being psychiatrist report.
So I definitely did, and I do think this is from the interview with the translator. The implication is that it's the whole book. I think
Interesting.
apart from perhaps the first part, which is kind of an introduction to like how she's feeling right now, but even that, to be honest, could just be like the first session or something. But yeah, I do believe that the intention is for it
Yeah.
all to be written as a report from his
Interesting.
point of view. Or, well, I guess supposedly unbiased, but as a report.
That's interesting, yeah, because I didn't feel like that at all.
It's interesting because, like you said, I think a few people on Discord, before finishing the book, said that it reads like a report on someone's life rather than like someone actually telling their own story. So yeah, I think it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it did read like that, but I don't know, maybe it's just because I didn't feel invested in the book that I didn't, yeah, I don't think I was invested enough in it to make the connection. I just don't think it was a particularly enjoyable read.
I don't think it's meant to be enjoyable.
No, I don't think it's meant to be, but at the same time, I think books should be enjoyable. If we weren't doing the podcast, I would not have finished this book.
Yeah.
I really, really had to force myself
That's really
to
interesting.
read it.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that at all.
But I suppose it's not my kind of book.
Yeah.
But it is my kind of non-fiction book. I read a lot of non-fiction about like sexism and misogyny.
Yeah, that's why I was, to be honest, very surprised you didn't like it, actually.
But I think it's because it's sold as a, it's not written like a non-fiction book, other than the dry statistics. Like, if you're going to tell a story about someone's life, make me invested in the character.
But I think that's kind of like I get your point generally.
I don't think it made an enjoyable read because there was no interest in the character or the, and I know, like, obviously if you then look at it because of it's the report of the psychiatrist, it makes sense. But from a reader's perspective, I don't think it particularly makes an enjoyable book.
No, that's fair enough. I really enjoyed it. Well, enjoyed is probably the wrong word, I think. But yeah, I didn't struggle to read it, and I didn't struggle to get invested in the character purely. And I think it probably depends, like, on your out, like you're saying, in terms of it being fiction versus non-fiction. I think it depends on your expectations and also like what you need to get invested.
Yes, and other non-fiction books that I've read that are kind of around this topic, like I've read recently, well, this year, I've read two books by Laura Bates, which are very much like everyday sexism and fix the system, not the women. So they're very, very similar to this in terms of the non-fiction, but I much more thoroughly enjoyed reading those books than this because there was more to them and more information and more, not more context, I don't know. But I think this is because it's kind of a cross between a story and non-fiction, it's hard to do that well, it like really well. I don't know. I think it would have been more enjoyable if it was less dry and less like a non-fiction book while still highlighting the issues. And I know that's because of it's the psychiatrist report, but I think that actually, in my opinion anyway, that actually takes a lot away from the book, and I think it makes it less impactful. I think it would have been
Definitely.
better if it was written, wasn't as dry, and just written more about Jeong and her story. Like the same, you could have done the same storyline, but kind of gone a bit deeper into the character, and still, what they could have done could have been to put like a footnote at the end, like an author's note with the statistics in, while still keeping the like the main bit as an actual story, because I think that's what I would have preferred, because I don't like the crossover between fiction and non-fiction. I don't think, for me anyway, it doesn't work in this case.
See, I really disagree. And I, like, which is great, I think, to be honest, because we very rarely disagree on books. But I think that, so for me, I'm not a big nonfiction reader generally with anything, but I think especially with topics like this, I think it can be very difficult to read statistics which already impact you anyway in day-to-day life.
Oh,
And
definitely.
you know, we read these things as women who, even though I think we can, you know, we have a job to do in terms of, you know, intersectional feminism and stuff to not just worry about ourselves.
Yes, definitely.
But, well, not but, and there also is something about these books always getting read by women when really it's probably other people who should be reading them. But I like personally, and I think what I love about this book specifically, the way that it is that if you're reading it, I'm reading it as a woman, and I don't need the character to tell me how she feels to be able to feel how she feels. And at the same time, I think the device of using the therapist, one, it adds another level, but the way it's written without really portraying her emotions means that if you're reading it as someone who isn't a woman, you don't feel like you're getting influenced by her emotions. You're getting presented with facts which might make you think about what's actually happening. And you know, it could work the other way around, and it really does depend on who's reading it. I think it's, and you know, again, like what place you're in and how you're feeling emotionally when you're reading it.
I just think, in particular, comparing it to lessons in chemistry, which brings up quite a few of the same issues in terms of like pregnancy and how that impacts work and things like that and marriage. The difference in how I felt reading Lessons in Chemistry to this, I was much more invested in the story of Lessons in Chemistry.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I feel like I got the same kind of anger around the issues, and it made me think about the issues, but was written in such a way that I was also invested in the story and the characters. And I think it's actually important to talk about the emotions.
Oh yeah,
It's,
absolutely. Yeah.
and I think that's what Lessons in Chemistry does really well. Like that's the comparison that I would make. And I know that it's not exactly the same and it's a different kind of storyline.
Yeah.
But a lot of the issues, you know, the treatment of women in the workplace, how women are expected to just leave their job and raise a child and, you know, work in mothers and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the same issues are there. And the difference in how I felt reading those two books, I much, much preferred the way it was handled in Lessons in Chemistry compared to the way it was written in this book.
Another thing that is interesting about this book, and I think that's going back to the, well, a book that I've read recently and that I'd actually like to recommend to you, but now I don't know if you'll enjoy it. But like mental health in general is a big topic, and I think it's something else that is perhaps qu like quite stigmatized in Korea, in South Korea, I think. And that's again kind of reflected in the way that like the therapist is the narrator, but like do you feel like he's really actually helping her?
No.
But yeah, the book that a book that I've read last week, I finished it last week again. It's relatively short, and it's a book that, again, I'm not 100% sure if you will enjoy, because I went into it not really knowing what it would be about. And it is actually, it's not portrayed as fiction. It is non-fiction, and it has some similar themes to Kim Ji-young, and it's also written by a Korean author, Baek Se-hee, and it's called I Want to Die, But I Want to Eat Tteokbokki, which is,
Oh, yeah, I've
I
seen. I think
think,
I was with you when you bought that.
yeah, probably. And it came out, I think at least a paperback came out this summer, and it was everywhere. It's got a very nice cover, and I think the cover comes in different colors and
Like
stuff.
three different colors. Yeah, I know exactly what which one you mean.
So that book again, like it talks about a topic that again we haven't really touched on that much in Kim Ji-young, but it's just the mental health aspect of it, and how that is actually quite stigmatized still in South Korean society, and also in other societies again. But yeah, that book I would really recommend. It's basically the author's conversations with her psychiatrist, and a lot of it is like just transcripts, and then there's some of her thoughts in between. But I found it really, really interesting and actually quite helpful, just generally. Again, it's another translated book that was originally written in Korean, so
That sounds interesting.
it's kind of nice to talk about a book that we don't massively agree on and still be able to have, a conversation about the points that it very, very validly raises about society.
Oh, definitely.
And it did, like, it definitely made me want to look into some of these things a little bit more, because obviously reading it from someone who doesn't really know that much about Korean culture and society and the treatment of women, I feel like I've learned a lot, based on the book, but based on reading and listening to things around it and conversations with people. Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting, the reception of the book as well, because it did really receive quite a lot of backlash from sort of anti-feminist movements, which are quite big, I think. And it led a lot of people to having a lot of very important conversations. And I think a lot of that is down to the fact it, like, so many people related to it, obviously, especially in Korea, because, like, apparently the author didn't really expect the impact it would have just because she didn't think it would be a surprise to anyone. But it, and like it, that's almost a point that it isn't to women reading it. It's not a surprise. That's their life, right? But yeah, like loads of people, like people who read it, like big, K-pop stars and people who were reading it received loads of like hate comments. And the there is a there's a movie adaptation, and the actress, when she was announced, when the cast was announced, she received a lot of negative comments about being in the film, and it, I think it just shows how, yeah, that it really triggered something. I think just and that is just telling a story the way a lot of people live their life. And that's that what I think makes it special. It's almost like partially what makes it special is the impact it's had, that it's just telling someone's story very factually without there being any sort of call to action, even. Like there isn't anything where Ji Young says, "Oh, let's overthrow the patriarchy." That's not what the book is. It
No.
just triggers people because it's telling the truth. Like,
Yes. Yeah, that's very
that's quite
interesting.
powerful, I think.
It is. Yeah, agreed.
Another positive thing that I think the translator mentioned is that because of the impact it had and got people talking, that it's really paved the way for more feminist and queer literature in Korea, which
That's good.
is just great. It's
Yeah,
just amazing, I
absolutely.
think. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
It is, yeah.
Personally, I would recommend it. I know you might not, but it is quite a quick
Depend
read.
it depends.
And to be honest, like even if you don't want to, even if the book doesn't sound like your kind of thing, it's definitely worth listening to some of the podcast episodes that I've linked. There's the interview with Jamie Chang, which is really interesting. If you're interested in, translation in general and learning a little bit more about Korean culture and about the book. And there's also a couple of episodes by a podcast called K-Pop Bookshelf, which is generally quite cool. I listened to like a few of their episodes, but yeah, they've done a lot of research, like a lot of background research in terms of Korean society and stuff, and that's linked in their episodes. So
Well,
I would
that's
definitely
good.
give those a listen. They're relatively short episodes as well, but there's clearly a lot of work gone into them. So I definitely
Yeah.
recommend that, even if you don't fancy reading the book.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I think that concludes our discussion.
I think so. I don't think I have anything else to add.
No, we need to get better at finishing episodes. It's like, other than
I know.
like, so yeah, I guess we're done now.
What else do you say, though?
I don't know. I think that concludes our episode.
And with that, this episode comes to an end.
Maybe. And he lives happily ever after.
Da, da, da.
So yeah, thank you all for listening to our episode.
If you know how we should end them, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know how we can less awkwardly end episodes. That would be very helpful.
Definitely.
But yeah, you can find us in all the different places. There's the things that I always forget to say at the start of the episode, but please give us a star rating, 5 if you
Yes.
enjoyed it. Otherwise, don't bother rating us.
Agreed.
But yeah, we have all of the things linked in the comments, not comments, in the episode description. I don't have thoughts today. Everything important is linked in the episode description. That includes the podcasts and things that I mentioned, as well as some of the other books we spoke about, and of course, all of the links and everything else that you might want to know about Scientists Who Read.
Yes.
So, thank you for a lovely chat today, Jan.
Thank you.
And thanks everyone else for listening. We will speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. May is the perfect month to join in with the book club if you've been enjoying the podcast. This month's theme is science and fiction, and we're reading Anatomy, a Love Story by Dana Schwartz.